Welcome to episode 185 of The Numbers Game. Marty here and Tommy is in the seat again as Jace is still away. But Nick, how are you, my friend? How are you going?
Just flying, you know, just cruising along without Jace. It's been a week now without him, so I don't know. Are you missing him? I'm okay.
A little bit, but Tommy's just been so good that...
I think he's got, dare I say it,
something
I think Tommy's
about
got
him.
Better hair. It's very... It's very similar to Jace's.
And just, I don't think he's been drinking on the weekend.
No. There was far less of a drama when we logged on. He was ready to go. Wasn't shuffling papers around.
He was early.
Actually early. Look, so anyway.
I will say I've got less on than Jason. Just from what I know of Jason. So
yeah.
I keep him busy.
We do love Jace. We love Jace. So that's why we like teasing him a little bit.
Well, yeah, I keep his team busy with my accounting. So it's we keep it in the family, hence why I've got his seat warm today as the producer. So thanks for having me, boys.
You're a good man, Tommy. You're a good man. And Jace, we do love you. Don't take that any other way. We do love you. We do miss you. And we'll welcome you back with open arms and big hearts. Big hearts. So hope you're doing well. Wherever you are, we still can't locate you.
Well, Marty, you've got a little update on your son and what he's up to. I'm always fascinated by young Charlie. I feel like he's a part of the show, but his voice has never been on. And I know you've tried to sort of do the deal with the boys and get the contract drawn up, but they won't agree on price, so he's not coming on the show.
Well, your son Bodie, I'm very impressed with as well, as DJ Dacker, I think it is from memory.
Yeah.
And he's running a little DJ business, so I love to see how old's your son, Tommy?
Yeah, he's 7 years old. And
7 years old. I mean, it's inspirational to see him really taking on his own little business and loving it. So, you know, I love to see him doing his thing on Facebook. It's been brilliant.
Maybe
so,
I'm thinking like maybe episode 201, I don't know, but we just let them go. Maybe we just get them both on, give them a microphone, step aside and just see what happens.
What
do you think? I'm can't be any worse. I think it's an upgrade. I think
a son off.
Yeah, well, trade us. Jace can manage the conversation, and the boys, Charlie and Bodie, can get involved.
I think, I might be overtaking the conversation here, but I think there's scope in that. I reckon we get both of them on, maybe not together, but I'd love to hear Charlie's story. Particularly given the home schooling, Marty, and how people are taking to that, as in our listeners. Yep. And I think the DJ Dacker story is awesome. So
absolutely. And Charlie has been watching DJ Dacker. He loves that he's doing something so invigorating. So it has caught Charlie's attention, which is always a good thing.
Oh, good. Well, what's Charlie up to at the moment?
As you know, we've been doing the home education piece, and Cole's been doing the majority of the work. She's doing amazing work around the English and the STEM and everything else. But I'm in charge of the business fundamentals and maths. And for me, it's about applying it to the real world. So he's been learning fractions, and I'm always thinking, how can we apply these methodologies into everyday life? And it's been really interesting because I obviously do my own investing in my self-managed super fund. And he's been really keen to see me researching companies and stocks and tracking performance, to the point he wanted to understand what it was to buy a good stock. And he has saved about $1,200 because he's been running his eBay store, the coin store next door, and doing well. And he said to me, "Oh, look, Dad, I'd like to keep $600 aside because times are tough." which he goes,
smart.
"I think it's important in these economic environments
to need liquidity."
Well, that's right. You never know when you need your next comic book, right? So it's so that's good. And he wanted to invest $600 Australian into the share market. And he was working through a number of principles that I gave him. So there's one thing to be able to you know, purchase a share and hope that it does well. But for me, it's more about explaining fundamentals that he can rely upon, regardless of if the share makes money or not. It's how do I give him a structure? And I thought when we were going through it, it actually probably would have relevance to the listeners, and it might help the listeners work out what they're interested in and finding specialized knowledge around what they're interested in. And, you know, rule number one is the principle, Buffett's principle, don't lose money. Rule number two, don't forget rule number one. So, you know, I reminded him that he worked very hard for that $1,200 and the $600 he's going to invest. So it's really important that if he's investing money in a company, that it's going to work as hard for him as he did to make that money initially, because he wants his money to continue to grow. So, and I also explain inevitably in investing, occasionally you'll lose, yeah, you will lose money here and there, but you don't want it to be due to a lack of your own effort and diligence and research and reasoning. That's the thing. So if something does go amiss, at least you understand why it's gone amiss and you can, you know, you can rectify a situation. Nick, what about yourself? Have you, obviously, you know, financial planning background. Am I on the right track with that as a first principle?
Yeah, 100%. And I think it's very difficult to not lose money though. So it's an interesting it thing from Buffett to say, don't lose money. And number two, don't forget lesson one. But I think with Buffett's knowledge, of course, that's probably easier to do than most of us for him, because he can research and he understands companies and what should and shouldn't be happening. So I think the lesson that I've learned over the years is if you don't know, then you go into something that you do understand, or you try and look for risk mitigation. So whether that's something like an ETF, you know, if you don't understand the share market or a particular company, there's products out there that you can invest in where you don't have to worry about that stuff. And the methodology is far easier than understanding what you're teaching Charlie. But yeah, like, you just think about how hard it is to earn a dollar. Plus yeah. You pay tax on that dollar, but then you can lose it all with one wrong decision. So I think we've exactly. all learned that. And then, not to, you know, hijack the conversation, but then you start to talk about buckets and you start to go, well, okay, well, if there's a possibility I'm going to lose it, how much can I afford to lose and how much can I allocate to that particular stock?
That's a great point right there, because he wanted to keep 600 aside so he never had to panic about it. But he also, yeah, it was clear that if he did lose money, it wasn't because of his lack of effort in the research and putting in the work. It was because that's what's happening in the market, rather than how many times do you hear people, they buy a stock hoping it's going to go up? You know what I mean? How often?
Yeah, all the time.
Marty, just on the nuts and bolts of, you know, someone yep. investing, especially a child, I've kind of looked into a few things, because you hear, you know, it's like, oh, if you put X amount away for your child at this age, you know, they'll have this amount by the time they're, you know, 25, or they start, or they can access the money. And I've always thought, like, the numbers do obviously stack up if you're looking at compound interest and where it's invested. But the challenge is for a parent like mine, who's, you know, a parent like me, who's got a young, successful 7-year-old DJ who's making a bit of money, where do we park that cash? How do we do that? Like, where do you actually start from a kid investing in stocks or, you know, shares?
Oh, I think Nick hit it on the head. It depends how much you want to go into it, right? So they're saying, you know, if it's something where you just want to make your, you know, your 7 or 8% return and it be comfortable year on year, the more diversified you are, the better. And Nick, you know, you probably just reiterate your first point on that in regards to, you know, having a bank of different stocks in one vehicle that's going to give you safety because you've got someone managing it. Nick, do you want to elaborate on that?
Yeah, well, I guess, Tommy, there's probably the easiest one to unpack is an ETF. It's basically a group of businesses rolled up into one stock, so you can buy it on the ASX. It might have, you know, I'm just picking numbers here, 60 Australian companies in it, 60 US companies, 30 from the UK, and maybe some property and some bonds. So it's just a way to hold an entire market or a number of different markets without having to worry about choosing a stock, such as, oh, I'm going to buy BHP because, you know, their price to earnings ratio is this and they've got this coming up and, you know, the economy is doing this, so I can see BHP really leveraging off that. You don't have to worry about any of that. You just hold an entire market. And all it means is pretty much what the market does is what you will do. And, you know, I guess this is from Warren Buffett, but you just buy a market or you buy an index is another word for that. You continue to invest in that market all the time. You reinvest your dividends when they come, and you should, you know, you should move in line with the market, which could be over time anywhere from 8 to 11% year on year, depending on your risk profile. So, yeah, look for a business like Vanguard, who will package those up for you.
I've seen that Vanguard have a Vanguard Kids. Have you seen that?
No, I haven't, but that's a great idea.
Yeah, and I guess it's like funny because the barrier to entry, I guess you've got to have a real interest in what you're doing. Otherwise, you are actually just betting. You're throwing money around.
Correct.
And so, yep. I mean, that's why hearing Charlie's story and his interest. Mate, I'm curious, how much are you pushing on your son versus his curiosity? Because I know he is a chess master.
Yeah, so he definitely is a strategic head, and it needs to be stimulated. He loves it, but you know he's had the experience of running a coin store. So I think everyone, you know, I always look for entrepreneurs that ran a lemonade stand when they were young, or I ran the bread stand at the milk bar, because you get the understanding of fundamentals of customer service, what you buy for, what you sell for, you know, costs, and then what you get to keep. So I think, you know, business owners can be very good investors as long as they're looking at stocks in the same way as they look at their business. You know, and I think that's what I'm teaching Charlie, is going, how do you bring the methodology of what you learnt in your business that made you $1,200 to now look at stocks in the same way? Now, he's driven that, because I wasn't bringing this up. He sort of just watches what I'm doing and wants to know more about it. Now we're having to look up Google Finance every night and seeing what companies are doing. So I gave him, so it's very self-driven. I'm very much about what are your interests, and, you know, we're playing cricket, you know, we're in the middle of winter, we're playing cricket because he loves cricket. So I'm going to where the hand wants to go and teaching him from that perspective. So the couple of the principles that I've given him on a stock in his research is, number one, is the company going to be around for the next 10 years? And I'll elaborate on these principles as we go. Does the company have a competitive edge in the market? Is the company increasing its revenues and profit over the last 5 years? Is the company good to fair value to buy? You know, is the company financially disciplined? Like, is their management strong? Are they making strong decisions? And is there a strong future opportunity in the next 5 years? So I've given Charlie a set of principles to go away with and to do some research. The fact he enjoys it, I said, knock yourself out. But come to me with a recommendation. So he's looked at around about 20 to 25 shares. He broke them down into a top three, and then he came up with one particular share, which I will share with you. Now, again, this is not financial advice. I don't want our listeners going and buying, you know, a 10-year-old, you know, share recommendation who's being advised by a golden retriever in the background. So do not, for goodness sake, go and get your own independent advice. But thank you, Tommy. Thank you for the drum roll. The share is Pulte Group. The ticker symbol is PHM. And he purchased it for $115.36 US, and he purchased 3 shares. And this was his thesis. He goes, is the company going to be around for the next 20 years? Well, it's the third largest home builder in the USA. And I'm pretty sure when we were talking about D.R. Horton, the stock that Buffett purchased as a home builder, got him sparked on this in one of our episodes that Nick brought up previously. But they've been around since 1950. Their market cap is $24.68 billion. The company is very profitable. It's growing, and it has a low turnover of people. So a lot of the management have been around for the last 10 years. So He believes they're going to be around next 10, 20 years for sure. So that was the big tick. And then it moved on to the next question. You know, does the company have a competitive edge in the market? Now, they're a general home builder. They also take care of prestige markets. They do builds for seniors as well. They also have Nikki Beatrice in this, Pulte Mortgage, as a part of their brand. So we like that because we've got a little bit of inside information on that. And another interesting facet of the business is they sell prestige furniture. So you know how some homes will have furniture displayed in their properties? So they actually manufacture the furniture that they put on display. So when people build those prestige properties, they can actually buy the furniture as well. Very, very clever. I like that. Hadn't heard of that before, but very clever. And their gross margins are 29.55%. When I look at DR Horton, which is the Buffett purchase one, their gross margins are 25.62%. So generally with a building company, that's actually very strong. If you're looking at tech software companies, gross margins can be 80%, a whole different business. 60 to 80% is good, but that's pretty strong. So initial thoughts?
Well, firstly, I think we track it. I've just had a look. It's done very well, mind you, even in the last day. So I'm not sure if Charlie's out there spooking it down at the valley. I know you went to the indoor cricket centre on the weekend. He wasn't spooking it. It's up 1.34% today. So no doubt Charlie's had an influence on that. But it's absolutely flying. So I reckon we keep an eye on this.
Marty, is this a long play? Is this the strategy he's going for?
Yeah, this is a long play, and it's also to be reviewed every 6 months to ensure that there's no significant changes. So it's one you just keep until the fundamentals change or there's a major change in the company to the negative. But his goal is to keep this for 10 years. That's his aim. So he wants a long-term play that he can look back on but he'll review it every 6 months. And he'll probably hit me up every night to see how it's going.
So just to if it's a 10-year play, 2013, so let's say that's roughly 10. No, here we go, 2014, the stock hit a high of $21.41. As of today, the stock is $117. So that's a pretty good return. And if we go back 10 years prior to that, no doubt you know this, Marty, but around the early 2000s, the stock was only $14. So not a big jump in the previous 10 years, but the last 10 years it's done really well. And I love what I love is obviously he's learning the numbers and, what's a good business and how does that how does that look on paper as in a good business? But what I love is the future opportunities, because I think that brings in so much more learnings. It's more awareness of what's happening in the world. You know, if you talk about housing, you're talking about, well, is there a housing shortage or not? You talked about building aged care, I think, or something similar to that. So, straight away I think about the aging population that's been driven by the increase in health options that we have, and we're all living longer. So I think when you go deeper on it, it's a deeper understanding of what's happening in society and the world and what opportunities are going to exist from that. And that brings in so many more learnings than whether or not it's a good stock to buy. So that's something I pick up from it.
And that's something I'm trying to teach about the fundamentals, which is relevant to business and life, but also, almost the psychological side of business as well. Like, the management's been around for 10 years, there's stability in the workforce, within their workforce, what are future opportunities? And, that's the sort of thing, it just brings more enrichment to the proposal. And that's what I want it to be. An education, not just it's a stock and that's all it is. So, and the next principle we talk about is the company good to fair value to buy. Now, it has a price to earnings ratio of 9.38%. So for anyone that doesn't know what a price-to-earnings ratio is, it's the market cap, so the total value of the company, divided by the net profit. So the market cap is 24.68 bill divided by the net profit of 2.6, which gives you a good market cap. So in those industries, anything under 10 is really good. Tech companies sometimes, you know, because their growth is so exponential, that, you know, 20 to 25 times is okay. But the lower the PE ratio, obviously, the better in a lot of occasions. So how did I get him started looking at value? There's a great app there called Jitta, JITTA.com. And it overall gives a company ratings based on the fundamental strengths of the company and compares it to other companies. And yeah, and for Jitta, it comes up as ranked 2 on consumer discretionary. Self Wealth is an Aussie app you can go into, and that gives you sort of value to undervalued ratio. And that was 12% undervalued on Self Wealth. Jitta's 64% undervalued. But we only use that as a tool to go, interesting. Maybe we'll have a little bit, we'll look into it and look at the numbers and see what we can come to. So it's a good starting point. From there, we go into Google Finance and get more of the numbers around the company. So good starting point. Something for DJ Dacca to get around, Tommy.
I'll send in the episode, mate. But while you're checking the stocks at night with your son, I'm watching some DJ set from Tomorrowland with my son. So chalk and cheese there. Chalk and cheese, Matty.
Well, the next part is, the next principle is, the company increasing its revenue and profit over the last 5 years? Just to get a read of how it's going and just to give you some insight, 2019, the revenue was 10.21 bill. As of 2023-24, it's at 16.06. So really nice growth there. And then, of course, we relate this to the profitability. And the profitability 5 years ago in 2019 was a 1.02 bill in net profit. And in 2023, it's 2.6 bill net profit. So really nice net profit growth, which means their expenses are being held down. You know, their revenues are going up and they're keeping more of it. And then I got Charlie just to have a look at the last 4 quarters just to ensure that it's still trending upwards, which it was at 2.73 bill. So he's done a lot of great work around this. And the profit margin from 2019 was 9.99%. To 2024, it now sits at 16.8%. So lovely growth. And to again compare D.R. Horton, the one Buffett was buying in the same industry, their profit margin was 12.87%. So steady, consistent revenue growth, expenses in check, and 2.5 times profitability from 5 years ago. Very nice find, Charlie, on that one. Very nice.
Bloody oath. And how often are you looking at these? You know, is it something you set and forget if you are doing a 10-year strategy?
He's going to look at it every night for He loves it. But I think you just come back to every quarter having a look at it and just making sure the fundamentals are still going to how you would want them to be. You know, so for us, our premise is, let's have a look at it once a quarter, because I don't want him ruminating over it every week and every day. At the end of the day, you know, it's based upon what we've conducted here, it should over time do well. So again, we can't worry about whether the market's up or down in a day. It's a long-term play. We've done our numbers. We've done our work to the best of our ability, and let's see how it plays out. So yeah.
How did he get down to a certain amount of companies? Is that something Jitta will do? And I know you said how did he get down to 20? Like, there's so many companies out there. I think a lot of people be thinking, geez, where do you start? But he's obviously gone in with a narrow view. There's Jitta.
Yeah, he started on Jitta. He's been looking up a few YouTube people speaking about it. Gotcha. But what's great is he goes to YouTube and someone's talking about a specky stock. He goes to the numbers on on Google Finance and goes, we're never buying that. So he's not – and I said, look, specky stocks could be of value in time. And he goes, well, I'll wait till they're of value before I buy it and waste my time. So it's like it was a really – but Jitter was what he was finding it, finding the initial stocks on, and then he was digging into the stocks from there as a first point of call. But it was handy because you're getting some evidence up front as to dig deeper. But yeah, that's the answer on that. The other interesting thing on a valuation metric that he's learning, which brings in fractions a little bit as well, is price to book. Now, price to book is the market cap of the company, $24.68 billion. And then they have a book value of equity. So this is where your fractions come in. So the book value of equity, which comes up in Google Finance's BVE, is the total assets of the company minus the total liabilities. So in this situation with Pulte Group, the assets are $16.5 billion. And the liabilities, minus the liabilities, $5.73 billion. So they've got equity of $10.76 billion. So that number's important to remember. Now we take the market cap, $24.68 billion, divided by the book-to-value equity ratio of 10.76, which gives us a 2.29 book-to-value ratio. Now, anything under 1 is exceptional value. 2 to 3 is okay. So it's kind of fair price, a little bit on the high side. Anything 3 and above tends to be overvalued. So it's a really nice way to get a learning piece in when he's looking up a company, that he can do these types of divisions, look at the subtraction of liabilities to assets, and finding a book value in the end to make a decision on that. So that was some good maths. We did this on the whiteboard, and he really enjoyed going through the process of working out what the book to value ratio was on the numbers and whether that matched up to theirs. So you could get the info, yeah, right up front, but he wanted to understand the dynamics of why that is a, you know, why that is a really good thing. So yeah, so interesting from a maths point of view, right?
Is this something that you're doing if you're a public listed company of that scale? Like, could you guys do a book to value ratio, or it's not?
We could. Yeah. We could, but yeah, we just don't have to.
Well, Charlie hasn't audited you yet.
No. No, well, Charlie's not giving us any money.
Yeah, yeah.
In saying that, though, we might need to hit him up by the sounds of it.
Yeah.
It's, sounds like he's flushed. Well, I've got no doubt he'll be flushed with cash in the next 10 years. So.
Yeah, well, and like I said, we can monitor it over time. The next principle, a couple more principles, is the company financially disciplined? So, you know, that's a really important thing. If you're going to put your money into it, you want to know that it's in decent shape. So the assets have grown from this company in 2019 from $10.72 billion to $16.09 billion in 2024. Really good. Liabilities have held steady. So all their debts, the 2019 was $5.57 billion. And it's only gone up to $5.73 billion in 2024. So the net profit increased by $1.02 billion to $2.6 billion. So that's really important because they're not leveraging on debt in order to grow. They're making really good profits and injecting that capital back into the business to grow further. So that's a really, really good sign. And, you know, that's something that I think all businesses can relate to as working well. And then we ask the question, what is the return on those assets? What are they getting out of those assets in investing for the future? And they're at 13.87%. Anything over 5% is very good on a return on assets. And their return on capital injection, return of their money making more money, is at 17.28%. Anything over 15% is excellent. And they've got cash in the bank, $996 million free cash flow, so nearly a billion. So they're injecting the rest of those profits back into growth instead of leveraging up on more debt. So really, really, really interesting and strength. The business is getting stronger as it goes. And the final thing to take us out, and I'll get you boys to comment, is looking at the strong future opportunity of the business in the next 5 years. And that's there's a huge undersupply of homes in the US, like in fact 5 to 7 million that need to be built to deal with the existing population. There's a lack of existing dwellings in the US to purchase because everyone in the US, very different to Australia, are on 30-year low fixed rate loans with no incentive to move. So a lot of these people that got in on the low rates at 2.99%, they're not going anywhere because then they have to jump to a 6 or 7% interest rate if they sell and purchase. So a little bit of a different market there, but it sort of tells you where the opportunity lies for new dwellings. New entrants to the property market, they don't want the headaches of doing renovations with any potential problems and costs that arise from them. They just want something new that can be custom built and it's more affordable to actually build a new home there than sometimes buy existing. So demand is huge. New home sales comprise of around about 10 to 12% of the market traditionally in the US, but the demand and need sits at 30%, nearly three times in regards to what they need to produce. So Charlie thinks that's a really good thing, and I think he's right. So he's done all that investigation, and what do you think? You like that future premise, Nick, in regards to his findings?
Yeah, I do, because it makes you think outside the box, and yeah, you can carry that into so many other aspects of your life, whether it be, you know, what industry you're thinking about pursuing when you get older. I think there's so much you can learn from that. So, mate, I think it's really cool. To Tommy's point, it's not for everyone, but I think the genuine, I think the principles can go across numerous things, not just stocks, right? It's
correct.
You're teaching him to understand the decisions that he's making, be careful with what he's earning, whether you're deciding on what stock to invest in or not. I think the principles are still really good, and you know, even DJ Dacca can use them. You know, maybe when he's rich and famous, he comes to Charlie to manage his money.
This is all about foundations of learning, really. Mm. I think all people could take something out of it.
Absolutely. Well, we need to check back in. I'll remind you boys and Jace to come back in. I like it how Jace brings up split screen of, you know, the competitor, and he brings those numbers. So I couldn't bring that today, Jace, and that's why I'm only allowed on the show every now and then.
So should we buy this stock? Finally, I've got it scorecarded for Charlie out of 60 points. Is the company going to be around in the next 10 years? He scored it a 9 out of 10. Does the company have a competitive edge in the market? We think there is, but there is competition because they're the third largest home builder. So he's marked that at 7.5. So I think he's been fair. Is the company increasing its revenue and profit over the last 5 years? He gave it a 10 because it definitely is doing that. Is the company good to fair value to buy? He's given that a 9. He thinks it is. Is the company financially disciplined? He's given that a 9. And is there a strong future opportunity in the next 5 years for the company? He's also given that a 9. So he scored the company 53.5 out of 60, which is good. So then he had to execute. So he's put the shares across into the US market, purchased his first 3 shares, and he's up 1.53% in 2 days and made $5.84 while he was sleeping. And so again, what a great $5.84 lesson. That's what it's all about. It's all about the lesson of specialized knowledge, that if you want to learn something and you have an interest, you know, how do you set yourself apart? And Nick was right. This is not just about the share market. This could be anything. This could be about DJing. You know, again, DJ Dacca is going to know more about DJing than most seven-year-olds out there. I guarantee you that. And he's going to be rewarded for that in pure joy initially and then obviously in compensation at some point in time. But that's what it's all about. He would know more about DJing than I would, you know, and I'm 52. So it's great to see the kids of tomorrow, the kids of the future out there having a crack. So I hope that is useful for a number of different business principles as well as, you know, share market principles as well. And again, no, not financial advice.
Love it. Thanks, Marty. Well, keep us updated, mate.
Well, again, if you've liked the episode, share. Let your friends know if you've got kids out there and you want to get them excited about shares or DJing, make sure you hit us up. And until next time, may your money come back to you with friends. Game over.
This podcast is for educational and informational purposes only. The conversations are of a general nature and do not qualify as financial or tax advice. We recommend before you make any financial decisions, you consult a licensed professional. Individuals on the podcast may hold positions in the companies discussed.